Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
And we're back. Before you get to the rest of your stack there, Scott, just real quick, I wrote a note to myself. I saw a headline about gas going up. Are there some price increases in gas or some concerns about price increase? But oil's been holding steady. What are you seeing? I guess that's really the question.
Oil's keep in mind, though, it wasn't that long ago that we were mid-80s on West Texas Intermediate.
Good point.
We're 97 now.
Okay.
Anytime there's...
Gets to that $100 a barrel.
Yeah, and anytime there's conflict in the Middle East, the traders use that as an excuse to run it up. Anytime there are barriers in the refinery process, they use that as an excuse to run it up. So it's up right now, although I don't think there's anything that I have seen on the front of supply and demand that would cause the prices to elevate.
Well, there also could be some weakness in the dollar.
That does have an impact.
That has an impact as well. So it's
a
couple of those things. So it could be, it always could be worse, but I saw a headline about gas prices and there was some concerns. But
yeah, back to 340 or so a gallon.
Yeah. All right. Hey, real quick, before you continue, you talked about how well our stock market is doing, and I'd like to just give a quick shout out to some of the other stock market indices around the world.
They'll appreciate that.
They do. They love that when I do that on the program. Switzerland's still out in front with an 8.3% year-to-date return. That's pretty good.
Let's see. I think that's reflective of investors' need for still that perceived safety, particularly in the Eurozone.
And also needing to have some sort of... The other thing is having an international exposure. They don't want to be all in the United States and say, okay, well, where am I going to be in Europe? And they pick what they perceive to be maybe as one of the stronger countries.
Yeah, Europe is still very much a risk-oriented trade, meaning the southern section of Europe is significantly riskier than the northern section.
But the south will rise again. Sorry, I had to get that in there. You set me up too well. Okay, who's in the negative here? Brazil's negative, almost 3%. South Korea's down, negative 1.5%, as always. Has something to do with their more irritable neighbor to the north. Funny how those things worked out. And Israel's down a little bit, a smidgen, 1% maybe. And a few others around. I mean, a lot of fours and fives and sixes around the world. So it looks like it could shape up to be a good year.
We will hope so. We had the January effect that we talked about yesterday. So we'll see what happens with that. And I think by and large, the economic signals are stronger. I always get nervous when I see a big rush of retail money into the market. We can talk about that a little bit, too, as we go forward. But we should talk about the jobs report. Every Friday, we get the jobs report. So we had that prior to Friday's trade. Non-farm payrolls up 157,000 for the month of January. That's a little bit lower than expectations. But what got markets excited and what really sparked the futures to trade up were some revisions of previous numbers. In November, they revised from 161,000 jobs created to 247,000.
Holy moly, that's a big revision.
Yep, and then on the heels of that, December moved from 155 to 196,000. So pretty good stuff there. That definitely helps the overall jobs creation figures. Retail led the way in January, 33,000 new jobs created. Construction rose 28,000 jobs. Healthcare up 23,000 jobs. Healthcare, I think, very much an effect of baby boomers aging. Construction at 28,000 jobs is very encouraging, particularly since we've been talking about the housing market for several months now and the strength there. So that's good news. We also saw, for the first time in almost 2 years, the average duration of unemployment moved to the downside. That number fell to 35.3 weeks. That's the lowest figure since January of 2011.
Okay, that's encouraging. You know what else I think may have also helped, Scott, was the Fed basically came out and said, no, we're going to keep pumping money in.
Yes.
And that can inflate the market.
Oh, most certainly. I think that there is a lot of chatter on Wall Street that despite what we do see as fairly good economic news, most of this rush that we've had in the last 3 months is Fed-based. You certainly could make a case for that.
Well, and again, with the unemployment rate, because more people are looking for jobs, did the participation rate increase?
Participation rate did not change from the previous month, which you may recall was a 30-year low at 63.6%. And the real unemployment rate is 14.4% when you take into account the back out the participation rate and that stuff.
Okay, because it could, as we move forward with that, there could definitely be that unemployment rate going back up as more people seek opportunities back in the workforce and decide, okay, now's the time to look.
Yep, it's a funny number. The unemployment rate itself is not the most heavily watched number as far as this report goes and professional investors.
Well, that's who we want to know. What they're doing. And those are the folks. And that's what Scott is doing, of course. He's a professional investor. That sounds really good when you say it that way.
Well, thanks. I want to talk to you a little bit about, you mentioned inflation.
All right.
I have several follow-ups to stories that we've talked about over the last, we've been doing this several years, it feels like.
I think it has been. But go ahead.
Certainly it has. Your old friends in Zimbabwe are down to $217 in the bank.
Huh?
The government of Zimbabwe has Exactly, $217 in the bank. Now, you may remember that Zimbabwe for a certain period of time was experiencing inflation at the rate of about 11,000%. Prices were doubling by the day. They printed some pretty large notes. They printed a $100 billion note. That's a Zimbabwean dollar. And then that wasn't enough, so they printed a $100 trillion note. And then they decided, well, let's just chop all the zeros off. But they are broke in Zimbabwe.
Not good.
Not good. They have an election upcoming that's expected to cost them about $104 million. All this started when Prime Minister Mugabe got into power there. And it is expected, believe it or not, somehow, that he will re-engage in his seat for another term. So,
well, he's going to spend that $247 getting reelected.
Yeah, they took all the land from the agricultural, from the private landowners that really were supporting that economy in the agricultural front, and it just was a disaster for really pretty much everybody except the highest ends of government.
All right. Lisa's letting us know, Scott, we need to take a quick break.
Right.
So hold on. I know you got more good stuff, which we need to talk about. We'll be right back.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back, and I will unleash Scott now to get to the rest of his stack of stuff.
All right, I'm going to give you a couple of, let's just call them mildly interesting stories before I get to a couple of more meaningful stories. I need to give you an update on our old friend from Chesapeake Energy, Aubrey McClendon. Do you remember him?
Yes, and look at that. Look at that. I've got the Wall Street Journal thing, but I'll let you tell him, Scott. Go ahead.
You may remember Mr. McClendon, who is the founder, actually, and CEO of Chesapeake Energy, was doing some odd things that caught the eye of the financial press. He was borrowing money from the company and then using that money to go into partnerships with the company, and their board was unhappy, and there were some activist investors in there that were unhappy. Well, they have decided to part ways. Mr. McClendon is entitled to total compensation of about $47 million as part of his exodus. That's based on his annual base salary of $975,000 and a bonus of about $2 million. The company has said Mr. McClendon's departure will be treated as termination without cause.
All right, and I'll bet you that he still gets to keep or will keep all of those various holdings that he's in partnership with him.
Yeah.
Now, if they're smart, they'd go ahead and clear that out, but they'll probably have to unwind that, and he probably gets to keep all of it.
Yeah,
so he's still going to be around.
He is the founder, and it is a publicly traded company, and that brings a heightened level of scrutiny, but he is the founder. So I think that does probably give him a little bit of leeway in the boardroom. The Twinkie auction continues. Hostess sale is imminent. Hostess has announced that they are very close to picking two investment firms, Metropolis and Company and Apollo Global Management, as the lead bidders for the Twinkies line. They have picked the two lead bidders for some of the other lines. $390 million offer from Flowers Foods came in for the Wonder Bread and Drake's brands. Flowers Foods makes tasty cake.
Mm.
So I think we're not too terribly far from Twinkies coming back to the shelf.
You didn't place a bid?
No, and okay. I don't care about it. I can't remember last time I had a Twinkie. It has to be at least 30 years, perhaps more. We have talked several times about JCPenney and their very odd strategy. You may remember they had a new CEO. He was the founder of the Apple I stores and was thought to be a retail genius. Mr. Ron Johnson took the helm at JCPenney. I guess it's been, a year and a half or so ago. And you may remember that their strategy was to say, no more sales. We're just putting our lowest price on the... Well, now they've said they're going back to sales. Yeah, that didn't work. And
yeah, it doesn't work, just to be honest and straightforward. Let's go back to tricking them.
Yeah, it didn't work, and so they're going to have to go back to it. The company has really paid the price for this really sort of trailblazing strategy that has just been an abject failure by every measurement, and so they have given up on that. I think they're still going with their store within a store, which I would think would not make owners of mall properties particularly happy. But
no, maybe they could hook up with Best Buy, and they could have put a store within a store and get no help.
Yeah, good luck to both of them. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think
I didn't tell you that. Did I tell you I went looking for a refrigerator?
No, you told me about your iPad experience.
I told you about that.
Why would you go back?
Because I was desperate. I have a little miniature fridge that sits underneath by the a little section where we keep our wine and stuff. And I have a little refrigerator right there. It was there when we bought the house, and it finally is giving out. And it's a special size, so I went everywhere looking. I went online, of course, and found exactly what I'm looking for. But I wanted to see if I could find something local. I wanted to buy local. And among my various stops was Best Buy, and no help. Got a shout out to Lowe's, which did very well in responding to my needs, and Home Depot went above and beyond. They were all over me to help.
Well, I think those companies are less susceptible to the Amazons of the world, because if you need home improvement things, particularly lumber and stuff like that, where they generate a lot of revenue, you can't really order it by mail order. So,
and they help you. They really do.
Yeah. Well, in your fancy wine room, here's another addition that I'd like to see you consider. 152-inch television from Panasonic. 152-inch. That is the size of 950-inch screens, weighs about 1,200 pounds, and it has resolution that is significantly better, as a matter of fact, four times better than the resolution of a standard high-definition set.
Okay, so help me out, and Lisa might have to pitch in here. Is that LCD, LED?
I'm going to tell you, it's 4K, 2K.
Oh, we've jumped to a whole new level. Now, is this really bringing this just a ploy to get a new television for your office? Scott has a 46-inch flat-screen television hanging on the wall in his office to watch the market all day.
Right. Well, a 152-inch TV would not, half of it would not fit in my office.
Well, then is this also a ploy to get a bigger office? You want Kalen's office. I know what it is.
Sure.
All right. That's good. That's very good. Well, speaking of lofty expectations, did we talk yet about Boeing with their earnings?
No.
Are you going to?
No.
Okay, can I?
Apparently I will, yes.
All right, well, you know all this bad news about their battery business, yeah, and all that. Well, they apparently, let's see here, a report out from CNBC, earnings, revenue rose to $22 billion from $19.5 billion. I think that's a quarterly number. Earnings are up, revenue exceeded expectation. So this may be just the stock is getting beaten up a little bit, it being in the news and negative and the concerns. But from 2013, let's see here, earnings per share, $6 to $6.30, and they're going to spend $2 to $2.5 billion, and they're on track to produce somewhere between 635 to 645 aircrafts in 2013.
Yeah, well, the impact on the battery issue on order flow is not going to be an immediate impact, because airlines can't just say, well, I know we've been planning on six Dreamliners, but now just forget it. You know, it doesn't work like that. However, several of their competitors have announced that they are no longer looking at that lithium battery. They're trying to find some alternatives. The problem is, right now, the technology of the alternatives is entirely too heavy. So they have to find a light alternative to the lithium battery.
Well, and on your point, these are going to also still do 60 787s. And that's the Dreamliner, right?
That's the Dreamliner, yep.
All right. Quick break, Lisa. Lisa says break. We're breaking. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. You should have heard that. We were strategizing about our plans for the future on the break. But we're back to talk about things that you're interested in. I've got a little report here. Did you notice, by the way, we've been talking about currencies and the dollar's been falling against the euro.
And the yen.
And the yen. I thought the yen, they're trying to make the yen weaker.
You're right. The yen's been falling against the dollar.
Yeah, the yen's been falling against the dollar. And now there's another one, the UK, the pound, because they're not on the euro. It's falling. Now, Wall Street Journal.
Against the euro?
It's against the dollar and the euro. Amid worries that the Bank of England is preparing to take aggressive steps to boost its growth, which means it's going to devalue its currency. And that's a report from our friends at the Wall Street Journal. So, interesting how this whole currency thing comes into play.
Yeah, currency markets are very, very, very complicated.
You know who we have heard about lately? China. Not much in the press, not much noise there. So,
well, there's a little bit of news out of China that I did want to share with you. I have a couple of stories on this line of thought that are both a little disturbing. Several media outlets in New York City in particular have announced that they have found out that the Chinese are hacking into their systems to track the reporting of the goings-on in China.
Okay, so these are not government people? These are independent hackers?
Well, who knows?
Who knows, right? Okay.
Who knows? So some hacking going on there. And then also, earlier last week, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced that there was another significant threat to just everyday users of computers for hacking. There's a company called Rapid7, which is a computer security company. They came out and said that between 40 and 50 million devices which utilize the universal plug-and-play product or feature or whatever, however you call it. I'm sure Lisa will correct us on that, are subject to hacking. Basically, it's, you know, when you tell your computer to find a printer, that's the universal plug and play, as far as I understand it. Apparently, that particular system is very, very susceptible to being hacked. And with 40 to 50 million devices out there, certainly is something to be aware of. The flaws could allow hackers to access confidential files, steal passwords, take full control over PCs, as well as remotely access webcams, printers, security systems. So serious stuff there. They are saying that the best fix for the time being is to just no longer use your universal plug and play and disable it.
Okay. And then you have to do it the hard way, I guess. You got to go and actually go find some software to download off the internet, Lisa? Lisa's like, you know what? That's a long answer. This is not that long of a show.
Yeah. I want to give you another update on Herbalife. It seems like we have a Herbalife update every couple of days.
Well, it is invigorating.
Yeah, this is not a direct story of Herbalife, although it was some bad news last week for the company as a fellow multi-level marketing company called Fortune High Tech was shut down by the Federal Trade Commission, which sparked about an 8% sell-off in Herbalife shares on the day that it happened. The Lexington-based company Fortune High Tech Marketing was involved in basically multi-level marketing for things like Dish Network, cellular phone contracts, stuff like that.
I got you.
But really, they were generating
their
revenue. Yeah, by selling your friends and then getting your friends to sell your friends. If you are charged with finding five people to go ahead and build your network, that iteration can happen 15 times before everybody in the world is involved in the scam. That's how unstable these things are.
Wow.
So you find five, and then your five find five, 15 times through, and
you're done.
That's everybody.
Wow.
So keep that in mind as you are being approached by folks who want to see you get rich.
Yeah, otherwise just say no.
And then finally, not quite finally, because I want to have a little bit of a Super Bowl discussion, which we never do here. But
I'm excited
to the very
about
end.
That.
And then I want to tell you that the National Foundation for Credit Counseling has come out with a study that basically says baby boomers are really ill-prepared for retirement. They're saying that about $500,000 short in retirement savings is the national average. 74% of boomers in the survey say they will rely heavily on Social Security in retirement, which is, keep in mind, about $1,200 a month. Most folks, two out of three, are delaying their retirement because they can't afford to. So if you're not quite at the retirement stage and you're still able to accumulate and save, good time to get yourself ahead of the game.
Boy, is it ever. And I saw that same report, Scott, and kind of to dovetail into that, the workforce is getting grayer all the time, according to USA Today report. The share of Americans 65 and older in the labor force went from 12% in 1990 to 16% in 2010. People living longer, people needing to stay in the workforce, their accounts decimated. And interesting point on this is that the increase was larger for women. Now, that probably has something to do with longevity, general health. They, of course, take better care of themselves. They are better about going to the doctor, all of that good stuff.
Well, it makes this whole talk about entitlements even more critical because there is such a demand coming on the Social Security that hasn't even hit yet, and we can barely support what we have, that really something is just going to have to be done about it.
As they say, something's got to give.
Yeah.
And one more, let's see. According to the Employee Benefit Research Institute, that's a mouthful, 13% of workers who delayed retirement in 2011 said they did so because of inadequate finances or can't afford to retire, and 6% because they need to make up for losses in the stock market. Again, same report from USA Today.
Yep.
So, all right, Lisa, you're looking at me like you want me to take another break. Yes? No? No. We don't have time for that. No time. We got to get to a couple more things. No last break. We're just going to plow right through and hit a couple more things. I wanted to ask you, Scott, with the Dow where it is, 14,000 roughly. We talked on the last show about people having kind of their mark and when they say, okay, I want to get out. How should people look at these numbers? Should they, because I know you may say, well, it's just a number, but there is a psychology and of aspect to it.
Well, I would say this, the fact that the Dow hits 14,000 is a really good indicator for you. If you want to use it as a signal to do something, use it as a signal to go check your asset allocation because your equities have most certainly outpaced your fixed income. So you may very well be imbalanced and taking on too much risk in your portfolio because of this run-up. So if you want to use 14,000 as an incentive to do something, use it to check your asset allocation.
Which might mean you need to go ahead and sell. And of course, if you're selling at a point where the values have come up, it's a good time to sell to get rebalanced. Now, of course, you could do that. And the risk that somebody takes is that upside risk you talk about, which is as soon as you do it, the market goes up, the Dow goes up to 15,000.
Risk first.
Risk first. So, but it could also go down to 13 or 12 or 10.
Risk first.
I like that approach, Scott. I'm glad you're in charge of those portfolios.
Thank you.
All right. I think that's it for today, Lisa. Lisa says, okay, that's enough. Thank you for being with us, and be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.